Warning, the following interview contains mentions of First Nations people who have been impacted by domestic violence or coercive control. Following the tragic deaths of Hannah Clark and her three young children, the New South Wales government has released a draft bill that proposes to criminalise repeated behaviours of coercive control. However, Senior Law Associate Emma Buxton-Naminsnik is one of the many associates concerned that this potential law could result in misidentifying First Nations women who could be trapped in the cycle of domestic abuse. Here to talk more, we welcome to the 2SER Breakfast Studios. Emma, good morning. How are you?
Good, thanks. Good morning.
Why are First Nations victims and survivors often misidentified by law enforcement officers?
So there's a few reasons that this occurs. There is a big problem with racism amongst the police, and this is becoming particularly evident at the moment with the ongoing inquiry into domestic and family violence related policing in Queensland. And this disproportionately affects First Nations women who aren't seen as good victims by police. So, and this can result in First Nations women being misidentified as perpetrators of domestic and family violence.
What are sort of the wider consequences of victim misidentification for First Nations women?
So I suppose one of the really important consequences to consider is that when victims are misidentified as perpetrators, that can result in victims becoming enmeshed in the criminal justice system as offenders. And the kind of consequence of that for First Nations people is feeds into overrepresentation in the criminal justice system, which continues to be an increasing issue, especially for First Nations women. And the other consequence of misidentifying victims as perpetrators of violence is that victims don't get support or assistance as victims and may be exposed to, you know, cascading further traumas and state interventions as a consequence of that, including child removal through the Department of Child Protection.
And there's sort of been a tradition of where there's been negative terminology like uncooperative or unwilling used by the police in their descriptions of First Nations women. How's this sort of impacting upon them in their processes of getting help?
Yeah, so this is something that I identified in my recent study looking at domestic violence policing of First Nations women. And it was very common. It was almost three quarters of the cases where women had prior contact with police that this language was used by police to usually justify inaction. So it meant that First Nations women didn't get the benefit of criminal justice intervention as victims and instead got treated poorly by police as perpetrators or, you know, victims that weren't worthy of further assistance. And this also meant that those women continued to experience domestic and family violence from their intimate partners.
And the domestic and violence inquiries by both the New South Wales and Queensland governments have said there will be unintended consequences for criminalising coercive control. So obviously they sort of recognise this.
Yeah, that's correct.
And obviously that's sort of the consequences of ones that we've discussed. It's just, I mean, that's a terrible situation. What advice would you sort of give to the government to ensure that First Nations women are protected before proceeding to criminalise coercive control in Australia?
Yeah, so unintended consequences. My colleagues Peter McGillivray and Althea Gibson and I recently wrote a piece on this. So the problem with using the language of unintended consequences is it does not recognise that these risks to First Nations women are foreseeable. First Nations women have consistently put the government in Queensland and New South Wales on notice about the risks that this expansion of the criminal law poses to First Nations peoples. So I think that what the government needs to do and what they haven't yet done is transparently and thoroughly engage with those risks. And really what's happened is that the government in New South Wales, in releasing this draft exposure bill, has taken a position on criminalising coercive control, but been very scant on the details about how this decision has been reached by the government, how those unintended consequences will be mitigated against, and I think really not faced up to the challenge of recognising and responding to those risks. And this is particularly so because that bill, which is currently open for submissions until later today, That bill's been released without any details about implementation, which will make a big difference to how this law operates on the ground for victims of violence and especially for First Nations women.
Amber, this is obviously an ongoing legal battle, but I'm glad that you are there at the front lines doing your thing. The research that you've referred to, is that available online and where can people go to check it out?
Yeah, so we recently, just on Friday, released an article in The Conversation about unanticipated consequences and unintended consequences of this reform. My policing research can also be found in the British Journal of Criminology.
Emma Buxton Namasnik, thank you so much for joining us here on 2SER Breakfast. Even though I've obviously made a motzer of pronouncing your surname, I'm sorry about that. Thank you so much for this discussion. The work that you're doing is incredibly important, and it is our honour and pleasure to be able to provide you with a platform to discuss it further.
Great. Thank you so much, Danny.
Thank you. And that interview contained mentions of domestic abuse and coercive control. If you or someone you know has been impacted by domestic violence, you can call Lifeline's 24-hour crisis hotline on 13 11 14 or 1-800-RESPECT.